I'd like to introduce the speaker for this afternoon who just barely made it, Bobby from Beverly Hills.
Thank you. I'm Bob Earl. I'm a drug addict and an alcoholic. For those of you who may consider touring San Jose after you leave the meeting, I want to inform you 10th Street does not run into San Carlos. Those who gave the directions to the speaker shall remain nameless. You know, I hate to use an example, but I got to use it because it's such a great example. Having been involved in committees and things in different times in my sobriety, you plan a convention, right? I mean, there's a lot of madness goes into the planning of a convention, and a lot of intensity goes into the planning of the convention, and finally opening day comes, and everybody is like, God, they gotta bring the meetings off on time and make it happen, and they're, you know, I mean, everybody gets really bananas, and then you have a speaker who doesn't show, right? It's meeting time, and he's not there, and now they start, it's like, right, you know. And the thing I noticed, which was really funny, I ran into a guy outside as I was coming in, and he said, they're looking for you in there. And I said, right, okay. And just as I came through the door, everybody was headed for the stage at a contingency, which means what had happened was they had let go. They had decided to quit waiting to make it happen the way they thought it was supposed to happen and just take it as it came. Now, if you want the key to easy sobriety, that's it. It's that simple. Quit trying to make it happen the way you think it's supposed to happen and just go with what is. Okay? Ha, ha, ha. I like to talk about only one thing when I talk at Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and at whatever, because it's the thing that's the most important to me. You've heard a lot of stories this weekend, so we don't need to bother with stories. Because to me, the thing that's more important is the pain of recovery. After 10 years, very few people drink, and it's not because of the fear of what the drugs and alcohol will do to them, it's that they know that they could never go through the recovery again, you know. The thought of raising your hand as a newcomer begins to become the most terrifying thing that you can consider. Although, for those of you who are new right now, enjoy this blissful fog you're in. Initially, when we get here, it's neat, right? We're dumb. We're so sick and burned out. Got no place to live. You got no clothes. You got no money, no furniture, like the Reverend said, right? I mean, it's just very simple. You show up at a meeting, guys just sit there. You go, oh, yeah, okay. You sit down, right? You know, you want cream in your coffee? I don't care. Fuck, just give me coffee, right? You know, and they give you a little coffee, like a little sugar, and you sit down in your chair, and you don't care. You're just glad to have a chair, you know. And then you get sober a little while. Well, that's a little too much cream. Could you take that back and bring me some, you know. What happens is eventually the mind begins to recover from the alcoholic fog you have kept it in all these years in order not to listen to it. And the thing that continually breaks me up in Alcoholics Anonymous is this attitude that somehow recovery is immediate. You don't hear people talk about pain a lot. Everybody feels okay most of the time. Jesus, I can go to penitentiary and find a lot of people feel okay most of the time. And you say, that's insanity. How can you feel okay locked up? Why not? What's the alternative? There is no, I guess if you could just accept God totally, completely, absolutely, unquestionably, the minute your butt hit the chair at your first meeting, you would have instant recovery. Now, if you hesitate, for 4 or 5 seconds, you're in a lot of trouble. Because then you're going to start thinking. You know, and it was like one of my sponsors pointed out to me one time after we'd gone through about 3 inventories, the crime inventories, and he had said to me, he said, look, do you ever realize, he said, you should take the same philosophy and apply it to sobriety. Everything that you did spontaneously worked. The jobs that you planned for months at a time with stopwatches, intricately, side streets, cars, the size of the car, would it fit through the alley, you know, all that. Work it out to the last seconds were the ones that I went to jail behind. You know. It was just ripping and running, everything went fine. Sobriety is like that. For those of you who are new, man, and you're having trouble staying clean and sober, it's no different than getting loaded. Boy, I bet some people went, what is he saying now? It's true. When you start getting loaded, you begin to eliminate the people around you who don't get loaded because you have no communication with them anymore. They're square and lame and doing their dumb thing, whatever it may be, and you are fast becoming hip, slick, and terminally cool. You know. So you begin to cut these people away from you until you're only associating with a crowd of people who echoes. We hang out with echoes. There's not an original idea in the crowd. Let's get high. Yeah, terrific. Okay, I'll go for it. Great, man. Let's, you know, it's like nobody ever says, ah, fuck it, I ain't interested. You know, or there's... you don't get any opposing viewpoints. Everything is an echo. So you hang with that crowd and you just go on into oblivion with them. Well, staying clean and sober is the same. You come here, you must eliminate the people who are drinking and using from your life. I'm convinced of that. I'm absolutely convinced of that. The people I see have all the trouble are the people who still try and play back there, you know, and live here. And you can't do it. You know. I was fortunate. When I came to the program, I had a notorious reputation for taking down both ends of drug deals. You don't have any friends to hang out with, you know what I mean? It's not an issue. You're pretty much alone. So in recovery... the thing I love is this thing that we seem to... I did it to me. I kept thinking somehow I'm supposed to be okay because I'm not drinking and using. It never entered my mind that I had spent 26 years of my life using everything I could get my hands on, okay, to not feel the emotions and the feelings that were going on inside of me. I just wanted to be sort of cool. You know, I didn't want to feel nothing. I didn't want to be upset by anything. I didn't want any particular highs or lows. I kept looking for that, right? You know, that's all I wanted was just, I didn't want none of that, right? You know. And it's like, I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and it doesn't work that way. The longer I start staying sober, the crazier I start getting. Each day of sobriety passes, one more day of madness starts to come on. You know, it's, I start to feel like I had been drinking the medication that kept me Dr. Jekyll. And now that I was sober, Mr. Hyde was beginning to appear, and he was a strange person, right? And he wasn't too tightly wrapped. He had a few mental problems. But you don't hear anybody saying anything about it at meetings. People are coming in meetings. Hi, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? Right? They just lost their old lady, their car, and their job, you know. And instead of walking, crawling through the door in the meeting, expressing some honest emotional pain, just, you know, they're just being cool. See, we will be cool at all costs. We do not want to look stupid no matter what, you know. Don't try out anything new and don't go anywhere you have never been before because you might look foolish. Great way to live life, Ed. Stay in the same box. Your mind will tell you that it's safe there. It's incredible the things that we can do to ourselves. Anyhow, back to the thing about immediate recovery. The old timers that put together this book were really smart. I never gave them credit for that for about 15 years. Kept looking for ways to fix it, make it better. It's a great program, let me tell you. Leave it alone and work it. It's incredible what will happen if you work the steps. Now, that's hard, by the way. you'll hear a lot of people. There are speakers who will go through the 12 steps with you.
Step one, and they'll tell you how they work step one. Step two, how they work step two. I mean, they'll literally take you down this path of the steps. Step three, here's how I work step three, four, right?
And you're going to sit there and feel guilty as a son of a bitch because you're on two, right? I mean, you haven't gotten to two yet. And you don't even want to think about three. Okay, because you know the minute you turn your will and your life over to the care of God, you're going to wind up a cripple.
Yeah.
Because that's what you have coming. The deadly phrase is God as you understand him. Right? I don't know the God you understand, man, but I didn't come in here with this loving, wonderful God who really cared about me and had my best interest at heart. I came in here, man, ducking, you know, looking. I used to think, God, I hope God isn't an integral part of recovery. Because if he is, I'm in a lot of trouble. Because he's not going to let me stay clean and sober because I don't deserve to stay clean and sober. That's what my mind is saying to me. That's what my head says to me. See, I am convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that in sobriety you have one problem only. And that's your own thinking. That is the only problem you're going to have as long as you're here and not drinking and using. Because it's the one that tears you to pieces. Nobody else does it to you. You know, sure, a lot of things can happen to you, but it's your mind's interpretation of those things that kills you. Your lover leaves. Okay, so a human being has passed through your life and gone on to somebody else. There's a lot of other human beings out there, man. You know what I mean? Listen to your head. It don't know that. It says, oh my God, what am I going to do? I mean, there'll never be anybody. What am I going to do? You know, I mean, it's like you just get mad with the insanity because you're now interpreting what's going on, see? This sucker is an interesting piece of machinery. I think somehow we got wired different. I don't know, you know. Because I watch a lot of other people just sort of go through life. They're born and they just kind of go through life. And somebody says, go do that. They go, okay. And they go do that, right? You know, I've got to have it explained to me first, you know. And I want to know if I'm going to look foolish, if I can't do it, you know. Or have other people failed at it too, you know. I mean, what so that I can look good by not failing, you know. It's like the insanity is endless. And if you wonder why it's tough to work the steps, it's because at some time in the beginning, the odds are you looked at AA through the same eyes I looked at AA through. I looked around my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 135 pounds. I'd been sleeping on rooftops. There wasn't a hell of a lot left, right? I weigh about 180 now, man. I look like a skeleton, right? And it's like I looked at this meeting and I said, this is the end of the road. I have sunk to the bottom now, right? No more good times. No more fun. We're in Alcoholics Anonymous. No wonder you don't work the steps. Who the hell wants to work the steps if this is the end of the road? For what? To go over the abyss quicker? You know? It's like you sit down in an meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and from that point on, we start fighting a holding action. There's a part of us that wants to stay and get into recovery and be clean and sober and find a God. There's something in us that keeps pulling us towards that. And the mind keeps saying, this is bullshit. Let's go drink. You know, who needs this? Let's get back out there and have some fun. So, recovery is, first of all, not fun. Secondly, the end of the road. Third, why do it? Why participate in anything that is not fun and the end of the road? No need, right? I don't know anybody who works steps willingly. I don't know anybody who gets up in the morning and feels really terrific. And as they're strolling through the living room at home, they say to themselves, God, I feel really good. You know, I think I'm going to take that fifth step today. I mean, I'm sure there's a few of you out here who do this, but there's a lot of us out here who don't do that, you know. There's a lot of us here who can't do that. There's a lot of us who have convinced ourselves that this is the end of the road. There's no hope. Man, there's no fun, no good times, ain't nothing. So I'm not going to do nothing. And the only time I work a step is when I'm at the end. When I have shot every angle I can shoot, tried everything I can try, maneuvered everybody I can maneuver, right? Done it 9,000 different ways and I'm still dying. I now come down to one of three possible solutions: drinking, blowing my brains out, or working the next step. Working the next step is the only thing that I don't know what the end result will be. I know what the result of drinking and using will be, and I know what the result of blowing my brains out will be, but I don't know what the result of the next step will be, so I will take the next step out of pain. I love people who walk around Alcoholics Anonymous like they work this goddamn program out of virtue. I mean, I don't even know anybody who got here out of virtue. Not true. I just got back from New York. I heard a few people there in a meeting who got here out of virtue. Well, I saw where my life was going and said, screw it, quit, and came to AA. Must be the water, you know. So everybody I know came here after they had shot every kind of dope they could get their hands on, died 14 different times in 7 different hospitals, man, been medicated with everything anybody could medicate them with. And by the time they had burned their body out so badly that speed is putting you to sleep and barbiturates are keeping you awake, and you finally fall into an AA meeting and say, there is no virtue in that. That's not a moral move, you know. I mean, your local pastor won't give you a lot of credit for that one in the book. The book. I love the book. I was scared of that book, man, for 5 years around here. I knew he was up there with a book and he was keeping score and I was really doing badly. I was doing badly in sobriety. I love what the minister had said about we all need somebody. A lot of times I feel like the little girl was up here on the table. Lost, man. Would somebody please come get me? Come get me, take me home, take care of me. This is getting too hard for me, you know. I was sitting in my hotel room in San Francisco this morning talking to a teddy bear, so that'll tell you where your speaker's at. Great bear, man. Has a neat smile, right? Just sits there and grins. He don't know, you know. See, I could sit there and grin like him, but I keep thinking. The thinking keeps fucking up my grinning. It's amazing how happy you can be till you start to think. Did you ever notice how you can be going along sobriety, having a good day, and then you start wondering why you're having a good day? No, something's wrong, man. How come I feel good? It's like the mind won't accept the fact that the natural state is feeling good. That it's okay to feel good. See, because we're convinced this is the end of the road, no fun. Remember? End of the road, no fun here. No fun. It's great what this thing will say to you. First of all, I'll talk about the morning madness because I always talk about the morning madness because the morning madness just used to devastate me in sobriety. It's like you go to sleep at night and you wake up in the morning and it is for me as if my mind is perched on the headboard like a vulture looking down at me. And I open one eye in the morning and my mind says to me, ah, good, glad you're awake. I've been waiting to talk to you, you know. And the first thing it always says is, you didn't get enough sleep, you're tired. I may have just had 12 hours, it doesn't matter. It says the same thing, it's not imaginative at all. Oh, you didn't get enough sleep, you're awfully tired. Better not go to work today.
But then again, if you don't go to work today, they'll fire you. Of course, if you go to work as tired as you are, they're going to fire you, too, because you're going to screw up, man. And it's, you know, that's the end of it. Well, now that you're out of work, what are you going to do? And then it starts doing a fast little mathematical juggling to figure out how much money I got in the bank. It says, well, you got just about enough to sustain yourself for about 6 weeks. Now you're out of work, and 6 weeks you're broke, man. What are you going to do then? By now, if you have any kind of program at all, you're trying to get a hold of any book in the house that says something about God, just to try and get a little reverse action in here or something, right? Because you're going under fast, man. You're on this grease slide down, right? You're out of work and broke already. You've been awake 10 seconds. And as you reach for this spiritual book to give you a little assistance in the morning, you feel this pain in your elbow. And your head says, ah, you know what that is? Ah, that's bone cancer, dummy. You're finished. How are you going to handle that? You going to go to meetings and talk about it, or are you just going to stay home and be chicken shit and hide out? You going to drink, or are you going to stay sober through this? So you've been awake 15 seconds, you've lost your job, you're broke, you're dying of cancer. And people wonder why we don't bail out of bed, man, greeting the day with love and devotion. Hey! Right? Why should you? You're unemployed, broke, and dying. You know, why get up? But that's what the mind will do to you. See, somebody once said it really good, and it's so true. And it is part of our disease is that we are chronically malcontent. I am chronically malcontent. Nothing is ever enough for me. I mean, forget you. I am never enough for me. I am never tall enough. I'm never handsome enough. I never have enough money. I never drive a good enough car. I never live in a nice enough pad. My old lady is never good looking enough. My clothes are never neat enough. Nothing is ever enough. And then if I start on you, it's endless. Yeah. If you're chronically malcontent, that will absolutely destroy any chance at self-worth that you have. Any chance at all. No. And if you think alcoholics have a lot of self-worth, go to a meeting and breathe the smoke. Non-smoking section is clapping like hell. Where the hell's the rest of you, man? It's true. Hey, don't look at it. You know, do anything you want about it. Say, hey, what's this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, man. What are you talking about smoking for? Might as well. Nobody's drinking. You know. You got any self-worth? Next time you light a cigarette, remember, suicide prevention says it's covert suicide. Covert suicide, which means it's a little tiny gun with a little tiny bullet. Think about it. I'm not trying to tell you out of nowhere. I'm not on any goddamn crusade to get people. I don't care if you smoke or not. I haven't smoked in a couple years. I smoked for 15 years in sobriety, right? So what the hell can I say? The thing that got my attention is when I went to speak at a meeting at the City of Hope. It didn't have anything to do with the patients there. They just hold the meeting in the auditorium in the hospital. And I'm in this AA meeting in this auditorium in the cancer center of the world, and everybody's smoking, including me, who was the speaker. I said, something's fucking wrong here, man, you know? I mean, here we're all just sitting there, you know. I have a baby who can't quit smoking. He's head of inhalation therapy. 10 years clean, man, and it's killing him. He's trying to quit. It's killing him, right? You know, he sees x-rays all day long, you know. I use it as an example, man, because I'm trying to make a point. We are more valuable than that. We are more important than that. People say to me sometimes, Gary, you look like you feel good. You know, I'm 17 and a half years clean and sober, 44 years of age, and I feel terrific. Okay? I
I'll give you a shortcut to feeling good. Your mind's going to love all this. First, surrender to God. Let Him run as much as much of your life as humanly possible. Second, I don't smoke. I don't eat beef. I don't eat pork. I eat very little chicken. I eat a little bit of fish. I don't eat sugar. I don't drink coffee. I don't drink teas that can't contain caffeine. I don't eat salt. You want the rest of the list? And I've begun to do some yoga, which is a bad experience. I'll talk about that experience because it was really good for me. I went to my first yoga class, and you just wear a little pair of trunks, and that's it. And you stand in front of these mirrors, and you do these exercises. And my head never wants to allow me to do anything that's good for me, right? If it's good for me, it's got 155 reasons why I should not do it, okay? If it's bad for me, it's got 155 reasons why I should do it, you know? It's like, don't go with the flow of life when you can go this way. It's like I spent 10 years of sobriety trying to con God into taking care of me while I went my way instead of going His way with Him. It's true. Anyhow, I'm standing in this class and I'm halfway through the exercises in more pain than I have been in a long time, right? Feeling very foolish because everybody else is, of course, doing them well, which is hard on the ego to be unable to walk in and do it perfect, having never done it in my life. And I'm standing there at a rest break, sweating, looking in the mirror, right? And my mind is looking at this image in the mirror, and it says, Jesus, look at him, will you? God, his hair is getting gray. One leg is shorter than the other. The hip is flat on one side. Look at that little roll of fat hanging over the goddamn trunks. I'd shoot him. Right? Why do anything good for yourself when you can kill yourself instead? Listen to your mind. That the alcoholic thinking, maybe everybody else thinks this way, I don't know, it's incredible. We will blow our brains out to get even with the other guy. I mean, do you hear that shit? Is that incredible? Right? I'll show him. Huh? Or all the people that we drank at, got drunk and drove a car 100 miles an hour at them. They're home in bed. Safe, and we're out dying. Cruising down the street. One of the reasons it must be that our founding fathers found it necessary to put the second step second must be because somehow in their experience they learned that when you take the chemicals away from those of us who have relied on them so heavily for so long, something happens. Why didn't they put surrender to God second? Why didn't they put the inventory second? Let's immediately get in touch with where we came from. Why didn't they put amends second? Let's clean it up quick. You know, let's run around and see these people and fix it. Why didn't they put the 12 steps second? Go help other people right away. Like a pyramid, get somebody else immediately. It's like... Why is the second step second? The second step is second because once we quit drinking and using, there are a few problems that begin to arise in the old skull. If you were 3-4 years sober and you, people say, well, there's no such thing as a timetable in sobriety. Maybe there isn't. I mean, I don't really know. I've seen people take some shortcuts that worked very well. They surrendered to God immediately just because they believed that was the way to do it. And things worked out terrific for them, you know? But it's like if you can't do that and you're 3, 4, 5 years into your sobriety, it's possible that you were in the worst emotional state you've been in since you got here. I'm serious. Which gives a lot of hope to those of you with 1 and 2 years. I realize that. It's possible your life is in bad shape, that your emotions are in bad shape, and that basically everything is just sort of sucks. I hate to say that. You know, I mean, it sounds like heresy, right? This is Alcoholics Anonymous. We're sober. You should be terrifically happy. You're 3, 4, 5 years. If everybody's so goddamn happy 3, 4, 5 years, why are there never any cakes for 6, 7, and 8 years? Go to a meeting, watch them give cakes. This is not just some idle bullshit I'm talking about. It's not a joke. Watch them give cakes. There'll be an abundance of cakes from 1 to 5, then none, and then some at 9, 10, and on from there. Where the hell are the 6, 7, and 8s? I mean, every year there were no, you know, I mean, it doesn't play. If everybody who's in their first year right now, today in this meeting, is still here and sober, 5 more years from now, there'll be an abundance of 6-year cakes. But that would hold true to last year and the year before and the year before, all the way back. And they aren't there. And why aren't they there? And I believe it's because you can run into a lot of trouble. A gal I know says, after about 4 years, it seems like it starts to rise up inside of you. What is it? What the hell is it? It, I believe, is all the feelings that I have run from all my life. It's all the emotions that I have run from all my life. It's everything that I use drugs and alcohol to hide from me. I don't want to feel pain. I don't want to really care about anybody. I'll tell you I care about you. If you're a woman, I'll tell you I love you. I mean, I'll tell you a lot of things. See? But I don't really want to feel what I'm saying. I don't really want to care. I don't really want to need you. I don't really want to know you. Because if I know you, I might like you. And if I like you, I'm going to care about you. If I care about you, I've got to give a feeling off. I don't want to give any feelings off. I want to go through life on Thorazine. I'm serious. I spent my whole life trying to avoid all of those feelings, the feelings of inadequacy, the fears, the fact that I'm a little boy, that inside every one of us lives a little child, a very scared little child, man, who went into hiding early, said, not me. I ain't going for none of that out there. That's one of the problems we have. That's one of the reasons you have such terrific problems. I have had, and all of my friends who I am close to, Alcoholics Anonymous, that I have known for a lot of years, we all seem to have had some problems in the area of relationships. Not the lack of. Why? Well, it's because we're dishonest. Not only are we dishonest with the other person, we're dishonest with ourselves. You know, it's like inside the girls, the women, there lives a little girl. And this little girl is looking around and she's saying, where is he? Where is this knight in shining armor that's going to take care of me, right? I mean, they know that he's going to ride in on this white charger, scoop him up, take him away, and fix everything, right? Going to take him to this castle and it's going to be beautiful, right? We're going to buy San Simeon and give him a little place to run around and entertain and have AA coffee parties and things, right? And inside all his guys is this little tiny boy, right? Okay? Now, we won't admit to it because, you know, there's a whole bullshit thing here about being strong, right? I mean, go to a men's stag in AA. It'll make you throw up, man. It's just... Sobriety is strength, goddammit. The only strong people I know are still drinking and using. I can find strong people. All I gotta do is go to a meeting in the penitentiary and run into some old friends. They're still strong. They'll tell me how strong they are, right? I've got it together. I'm running everything in the block, man. Everything's cool. Well, don't be telling me about that AA bullshit. It's just a crutch. It's a goddamn crutch, that Alcoholics Anonymous you go to. I say, yeah, right, it's a crutch. I'm going to hobble out of here on my crutch. I'm going to get my white Cadillac. You know. Drive that sucker home and nuzzle in next to my lady, make love and have a beautiful evening while you stand up here being strong. You know. Praying to God that somebody don't come through the doors next week, 7 feet tall, weigh 300 pounds, think you're cute. By and large, the membership of Alcoholics Anonymous is basically chicken shit. It's a program written by frightened people for frightened people. Accept it. It's okay. You don't have to be strong. If we got to be strong here, you might as well be dead. I mean, if I can't be honest here, if I can't say I talk to teddy bears here, if I can't say I get emotional in sobriety and I cry, if I can't say I get scared to death here, if I can't say that I'm weak and I'm frightened and I'm inadequate and some days I can't get out of bed and there's days I can't face the world and there's days the job is too much for me and I never thought about killing myself until I got sober, right? I mean, if I can't say those things here, then where the hell do I go? The hell with all that being strong and hip slick and cool. I'd rather walk in a meeting and somebody say, "How's everything going?" Say, "Shit, I can't take one more meeting. Somebody please help me." I mean, we're supposed to be a fellowship of men and women who are gathered together. A fellowship. We're supposed to help each other out, man. This is it. This is all there is for us. And this is the best deal in the world. Anyway, back to the little boy inside. I can't hold one thought long, thank God. If I could hold one thought long, I would have killed myself 10 years ago. I keep getting sidetracked on my way to the oven. That's the advantage of being totally nuts. I mean, you can't even pull off that suicide, you know. What was I doing? What the hell is this gun for? Oh, well, screw it. You ever done that when you were worried about something? I mean, I love to worry. I don't know about you, but worry, God, my mind loves to worry. It looks for anything to worry about. You know, it's like it's got radar. It'll find something to worry about. It's like, why feel good, right? Why have a beautiful day? Why accept the fact that maybe God really is everything they say he is? Maybe he really is loving and all-forgiving and all-present and all-powerful. You know, there's a little book I read that says, if you want to have an interesting day, try that. Go through the entire day thinking, speaking, and acting as if God is all-loving, all-powerful, all-forgiving, and all-present. Spend an entire day. The speaking it is the easiest. The acting it is the next hardest. And the thinking it is damn near impossible. Because we just don't want to accept that. My mind does not want to accept the fact that there's something more powerful than it. That there's something more correct than it. And it's always wrong. Everything, every disaster has ever projected for me has never come true. And it has had me absolutely terrified, scared to death, petrified, huddled up in a little ball in the corner of a closet at home, sober, sitting with my knees in my chest, wondering where my teddy bear is, and it didn't come off. Somehow it got fixed. Why? Because eventually I will surrender. Missed that one, eh? Okay. Wait till you're in the closet, you'll understand. You say, oh, that's what he meant. This is when you surrender. When you're pulling the closet door closed behind you, let it go. It's getting too tough, man. Anyhow, back to the little boy inside of us. I mean, I know, guys, that we want to maintain this image of being really, you know, suave and cool. But inside, there's this little tiny boy who's never really been allowed to live. And he's saying, where is she? God, where is she? As soon as I find her, I know she'll take care of me, you know. I just want to lay my head down in her lap and have her go, there, there, little fellow, everything will be okay, right? Yeah. Mommy will take care of you, it's all right. So that's what's going on. She's looking for him on the white charger, and we're looking for Mommy, right, to lay her head down in Mommy's lap and have her stroke us. Well, Christ, if we, when we run into each other at a meeting, you would never know it. Yeah. I mean, we'll look across the meeting hall, and man, there she stands, all decked out and sexy and, you know, clinging fabrics and looking really good. And we'll be standing across the room. We'll begin to stroll across for her. And we make sure it's a good walk, too. You know, we don't want to stumble. We've checked out the terrain. We don't want to do anything foolish, you know. We've got it all figured out and down, and we make that walk over to her, and we just kind of slide up and say, hey, hi, how are you? And she says, fine, how are you? Want to go have some coffee? Sure, let's go. Nobody walks up and says, will you please take care of me?
Well,
then 3 weeks down the line, man, you're both sitting there looking at each other and waiting for the other one to take care of you. But nobody's saying anything. And then finally the frustration gets so great, you split and you go someplace else. And it would be so much more honest if you could just look at the other person and say, "Will you please take care of me?" On the days that I can't take care of you, would you take care of me? And on the days that we can't take care of each other, we'll call our sponsors. So all it takes is a little communication. But there must be a loving God or He wouldn't have provided us with all these wonderful people. I know at times you don't think they're wonderful because your mind is like my mind and it commits character assassination on everybody it sees. My head dislikes people it doesn't even know. Somebody can walk into a room I've never talked to, never seen, never met, don't know anything about them, and my head will say, "I don't like them." It has nothing to base that on. Ask it sometime why it doesn't like him. It has an even more brilliant answer than that. I have said to my head, "Well, why don't you like him?" My head will look at him and say, "I don't know, fuck him, I just don't like him." I was 14 years clean and sober before I snapped to that one. 14 years, man. And I realized at that time that for 14 years, this thing had been keeping me away from people who could be very valuable to me. Because it would look at somebody in a meeting, even if they said the greatest things I had ever heard, it would look at him and say, "I don't like him. Something's wrong with him. He's a fraud," and so I wouldn't talk to him. Now, when my head says, not to anybody, when my head says, "I don't like him," I usually try and go over and say, "Hi, I'm Bob Earl. How are you?" And get to know them, because I know that they got something that's going to help me. Something that's going to benefit me. Because otherwise my mind wouldn't try and keep me away from them. I know it's hard to accept these things, okay? Because acceptance has got to get past this thing, this machinery. I say this all the time, it's true. If you don't think your mind controls you in a negative way, tomorrow morning, which is Monday, if you haven't already been thinking about that today, which is Sunday... Get in your car in the morning and take a different route to work. Listen to the silence. You know why? Because everybody's head is saying, "What do you mean take a different route to work?" Simple. Take a different route to work. Don't drive the same streets. That's simple. Still silence. You know why? I know why. Because your head is telling you why you can't do that. "Well, I can't take a different route because I'm, you know, fuck, I mean, I get out there, I mean, you know, like, well, there's no on-ramp down there. I can't get the on-ramp down there. What the hell, you know, I mean, if we go the other way, we could get lost. Screw it, we'll be late for work. There's no time to be playing around here." I know what's going on, man. I got one, too. Yeah. They all work alike. You know why it doesn't want to take a different route to work? Because it can't think. It pays attention to where you are or it gets lost. And it can't stand being lost because it can't stand looking bad. That one came to me one morning when I realized I was capable of walking out of my house, getting in my car, and the next thing I knew I was getting out of my car at work and remembered nothing of what had happened in between. I missed 20 minutes of life had just gone out the window. Because I had the route down so pat that I could just think all the way in. I mean, I knew when every light was going to change and where to turn. And like a New York cab driver, I just knew how to do it without even looking. You know, it's just like I could get to work and think, worry, get ready. I mean, you spend, if you're like I am, you spend most of your day getting ready for things that don't happen. Preparing yourself for phone calls that don't come. Getting ready for visits from people that have been dead for 4 years. You didn't know it. My mind, I never want to look bad, so my mind is always getting ready for the first encounter with my secretary or with my boss or with this person or with that person. It's like, be prepared. It's like a friend of mine used to say, he sat around AA, it's like he was taking a college course, like he was getting ready for life, preparing, rehearsing. Practice. And one day somebody said to him, The game is today. One of the lines I love more than any other, life is what is happening while you're busy making plans. I got to come back to the start of this meeting. The minute everybody let go and decided to have the meeting anyway, the speaker showed up. I had nothing to do with the timing. Well, I wasn't in my control. You know, I don't get too crazy about those things anymore. I always figure when I get there, I get there. If I don't get there, I don't get there. It's okay. It doesn't bother me. I've not shown up before. Got a lot of people crazy. And you know what I always hear? God, we had a great meeting. Sorry you couldn't make it, but we had a participation meeting and five people got up that really needed to talk. After you hear that for a while, you say, maybe it's not so essential that I get where I think I got to get because I have laid these plans in concrete. People say, well, what about goals? You got to have goals. You can't just walk around saying, oh, I'll live today. Got to have some plan. What about the future? After that, there's not a lot of people staying sober through 6, 7, and 8. I wouldn't worry too much about it. I just hang out today and forget it. Sure, you can have goals. Goals are terrific. As long as they are a direction, not a destination. See, it's like, it's okay to go back to school to become a doctor, but maybe you're supposed to be a vet, so don't be surprised if you have to change in midstream. Maybe it's not a neurosurgeon that God has in mind for you. You see, somebody said, how do you tell God's will? It's easy. Walk out the door, start down the street. When you run into a wall, turn left. We don't turn left. We try and climb the wall. You know. We know the answer is on the other side of the wall. Ask me. My mind knows that if I can just get over this... The hell with the fact that all the flowers and the music and all everything beautiful is over here. I know that over this black, dirty wall is the answer if I can just get over it. We spend all our time doing anything but what is easy. Because my mind's got me convinced that God's will is tough. For it to be good, it's got to be hard. That's a work ethic. If you don't have a job, you're not a worthwhile human being. Come on. Jesus, you know, I mean, that's ridiculous. It's up to the person's personal self-worth. What the hell? I know people have successfully not worked for 2 or 3 years in sobriety. Didn't kill themselves, didn't kill anybody else, never harmed anybody, and were able to be of a lot of benefit to a lot of people in sobriety because they had the time. Because they had the time. We're so quick to judge. Forget judgment. I don't even want to get into that one. The more you do of it, the tougher it's going to be on you. Because I found out sobriety, boy, is like instant retribution. The minute I sneer at you for something you do, I'm going to find myself in the same problem in a week. I go, oh, that's how I got into that, huh? It's interesting. You know, I have done a lot of things in sobriety. Stole money from the group treasury. Been bankrupt. Had 2 automobiles repossessed. Had about 30 jobs. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. Nothing necessarily changes here, except the fact that we don't drink. And eventually you begin to start to get in touch with the feelings. You say, well, what the hell do you do? I mean, what do I do when I start to get in touch with my feelings? What happens? I mean, I'm scared. I don't know what to do. I hate my job. I can't stand where I live. I don't have any money. I can't afford to move. I'm petrified. Da-da-da-da-da-da. The voices, right? One of the things the voices will always try and convince you of is that you're going to break. They'll convince you can't take any more. You are going to break. It's a lie. You're not going to break. Worst thing that can happen to you in sobriety is you'll have a nervous breakdown, and it's no big deal. I've had 2, and by the time they're over, you wonder what you're worried about. That's it? Just some tears for 2 or 3 days in the corner? Who cares? Where's the next one? Felt good. So when your mind starts to tell you you're going to break, relax. You're not going to break.
But what do you do if that's the case? If nothing is ever enough, if you're, you know, if you're chronically malcontent, if you're scared half the time, if you're busy preparing for things that never happen, you can't take a different route to work because you want to think, your mind will find the negative in anything before it finds the positive. It will always go to the negative. No matter what anybody says to you about anything, the mind, if you're like mine, will go to the negative. If somebody walks up to you right now and says, here's $1 million, if your mind is like mine, the first thing it'll think about is how much will be taken by taxes. Yeah. I mean, my mind will see, they'll run an ad on TV or something and say that Martha Jones just won $265,000 for a buck in the Hilton Hotel slot machine. And my head says, I wonder if we could do that and beat Uncle Sam out of the money. There must be a way. I'm always looking for the angle, and I'm always looking. It's like I've had to become absolutely, totally, thoroughly convinced for me that for me, and I'm not saying for you, that there is no big score. You know? My mind has beaten me to death with this big score for years. Ah, tomorrow we're going to get it all. Rolls Royces and pretty women and big houses and millions of dollars and everything will be okay. Just wait and see. But in the interim, you're probably going to die. I don't know how I can impress upon you the fact that one of the best things you can do when you're sitting home alone thinking a lot and you're scared and you're beating yourself up because no one would dare say to you what you say to you. No one has ever tore you apart, cut you up, belittled you like your own mind has. I mean, you know, you'd kill anybody else who said to you what you say to you. I'm serious, you would. You'd have to. No matter who it was, you would have to. Because you're the one that tells yourself how you can't do it and how you're no good and how you're weak and how you're inadequate and how you're not handsome enough and you're not bright enough and you're not worthy enough. Yeah, da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da. For those of you who have the voices, you know what I'm talking about. It's a bitch. It is an absolute bitch. Because they're very loud. My mind is terribly petty. Oh, never mind. I'm having a great time up here. I'll be with you in a minute. Just give me a... Okay, so if everything I say is true, what do? It's simple, surrender. That's it. That's the big secret. That's the one that you've been looking for. That's the one your head has been looking for. Somewhere in the book, your head knew there was another, and there was the magic phrase, the thing that was going to fix you and make you okay. You go to meetings looking for where is that? Where is that thing that's going to fix me? Where's mine? Why am I going to meetings and reading steps? And why am I still half crazy and sick and things aren't happening for me? What's wrong with my life? What's wrong with me? How come I'm 5 years sober and a guy 1 year sober is happier than I am? Right? Where's mine? What's wrong? Where is that magic answer? Fix me! Surrender. That's it. That's the big secret. That's the magic answer. Kind of falls flat, doesn't it? Begin to trust God. It says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, faith without works is dead. A lot of people believe that trusting is the works, not digging the ditch. Trusting that the ditch will get dug somehow. If you have to dig it, okay, but that's not necessarily mandatory. Trust God. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says the main object of this book is to help you find a power greater than yourself. We have talked about automobiles and girls and relationships and jobs and insanity and madness and sobriety and everything else, or I have. And the big book says the main object of this book is to help you find a power greater than yourself. Period. Which means, therefore, we're going to talk a great deal about God. That's not me. I'm not making that up. That's what the book says. The main object of that book
Isn't to get you sober? Nothing. The main object of that book is to help you find a power greater than yourself. Well, if you're like I am, you know deep down that it's the thing that you need more than anything else in the world, man. I mean, there's a little guy inside of me who has for years been waiting for somebody to take care of him.
Please.
I mean, I'm still talking to teddy bears, for Christ's sakes, right? You know, people who talk to teddy bears need someone to take care of them. You can't always make the decisions,
or particularly the right ones. I can make decisions like that. It's being killed by them after that gets ridiculous after a while.
I have had to reach a point through pain in sobriety. Never be angry about your pain. Don't get crazy because you're in pain, because your pain will drive you to better program. Your pain, I'm serious. Your pain will drive you to better program. It'll drive you to another sponsor if you need one. It'll drive you to work in the steps. It'll drive you to God. The pain will drive you to a better program. The only thing that really gets me angry is that people walk around like there is no pain. I'm sober. Isn't it wonderful? Yeah, you bet it's wonderful to be sober, because the alternative is a bitch. The alternative to being sober is not being sober, and that was no fun at all, which is why we are all gathered together in this room here today. If it was fun, we would still be doing it. If it worked, we would still be doing it. We wouldn't be sitting in this goddamn room listening to all this bullshit. Right? Of course not. You'd be out there. But we're not out there because it didn't work. And we came here and we say, God, do something. That's all you got to do. Say, God, do something. You know, it is so hard to surrender as long as you believe that God wants anything. Somebody said to me one time, and this was really hard for me to accept. He said, when you finally come to realize that God loved you as much when you were holding a gun at a man's head as he loves you when you stick out your hand to the newcomer, then and only then will you understand God. At the time that was told to me, it was inconceivable, unacceptable. I could not believe that God could have loved me when I'm holding a gun at a man's head as much as he loves me today when I stick out my hand to the newcomer. It didn't compute in my mind. I am thoroughly convinced as I stand here right now, this moment, God loved me as much when I was holding a gun at a man's head as he loves me today. Because what they've been telling us for 2,000 years is very simple. His love is always all-powerful, all-present, all-forgiving, never changing. Okay? Now, I crawled into Alcoholics Anonymous 17 years ago, August 1962. 135 pounds, sick, uneducated, no trade, no profession, no friends, no money, nothing. And for the preceding 10 years after that, the first 5 years were a lot of meetings and a lot of coffee and a lot of newcomers and a lot of institutions and a lot of pain, a whole lot of pain. And the pain got so great I had to scream and beg God to please take care of me. And the minute you say to God, take care of me, you've got to take the conditions off your life. It's like a friend of mine says, when they finally accepted the fact that their life was none of their business, it got good. See? And I had to take all conditions off and say, okay, God, whatever. Today, 17 years clean and sober, I earn my living as a writer. That's hysterical. I don't have time to tell that story, right? I would love to tell that story. That one is hysterical. I mean, I have no education, I can't spell, I have failed English ever since the fourth grade, I didn't know anybody who wrote anything, I was just insanity. I went to vocational rehabilitation and I said, I want to be a writer, and they laughed. I had broken my back, never figured because something bad has happened. For me in sobriety, when things have been happening in my life in sobriety and they appeared as if it's the worst tragedy that could have happened to me, it always inevitably turns out to be the best thing that happened to me. I guarantee you that. I just guarantee you that. I broke my back and wound up being a writer.
Didn't have anything to do with the head.
Never mind. Inside joke. I have a lot of fun talking to myself. I've had meetings at home alone. Saved my life. If you ever get crazy in the middle of the night, put the chairs in the circle, have a little discussion meeting. You'll have a lot of fun. You'll also wind up in a violent argument with yourself. Today my life is incredible. I have a good job. I earn a hell of a lot of money as a writer. My life is like I never believed. You know, I mean, I just came back from a vacation, got on airplanes, flew to New York, bummed around, had a great time, and just like a people. There's a little friend of mine used to say, all you ever wanted to be was a people. Just a people. I'd like to take about, you know, I mean, there's not the time, but it's like, it's really frustrating because it's like you just want to take people by the neck and shake them and say, it's okay. On the other side of the pain, if you will just fucking let go, it's okay. God really isn't waiting in the bushes with a goddamn flamethrower. You know? It's not true, and spirituality is not boredom. You know, I mean, I've got everything I knew I could never have, and it came through God. I mean, I'm writing. I'm a writer. You know, scrap that one. I mean, I live well. I travel well. I have got things I never dreamed of, and all I did was let go. So if I've got them, I mean, think about that for a minute. I don't think about it. Just let it pass through quickly. I mean, if you could only do one thing for yourself, if you would give, and I mean, this is going to sound like absolute insanity, allow yourself to take 30 days of your life, 30 lousy little days of your life, and just go with the flow. Just go with the flow. You know, I see people hanging jobs that are killing them, man. I say, well, I'm only 5 years away from retirement. I go, who cares? If you're goddamn miserable, man, who cares? Maybe you should be painting pictures on the beach at Carmel. I don't know. I've got babies who have tried to do the right thing and have been beaten almost to death by circumstances until they let go and did other things. I've got a guy who was convinced he should be a motorcycle mechanic because he spent 20 years of his life in the penitentiary and deserved nothing better. After he broke his neck twice fixing motorcycles, he decided to play the guitar, which is what he really wanted to do. Okay? Everything is beautiful in his life today. I can tell you story after story after story about people who finally said, screw it! I give up. I know one guy went through sponsor. He said, I really would like to go to law school. And say, here's your mind. You want to hear the alcoholic mind? This guy walks up to his sponsor. He said, I really would like to go to law school and study and be a lawyer, but Jesus, by the time I graduate, I'll be 44 years old. Sponsor looked at him, one of these dumb, simple alcoholics. So how old will you be then if you don't graduate? If your mind is like my mind, it is always trying to talk you out of the one thing, change. Change. Take a chance. Let go. Don't be so scared of the unknown. My insanity is it doesn't want anything new it can't control. And God says, skip it, sucker. You know, give me the wheel or just get out of the car. Okay? I can only tell you from vast personal experience, give him the wheel. God bless you.